The Geek Life Podcast is, get this, a discussion of all things geek. Technology, movies, television, books, comics, games, nothing is off limits.
Renew!
Sigh.
Renew!
What's this red blinking light?
I had that removed twice. Did you know that the MPAA film rating system began on November 1st?
No wonder we get all moody in the winter.
I know. You know, I wasn't going to say that.
Would you like some syrup?
Join Mike, Paul, Richard, and Melissa at The Geek Life Podcast at thegeeklife.tv.
It's time for the Tropecast.
Just moving in a circle, though, it's kind of weird.
So this is the Tropecast. I am Adam Smithy of webcomichell.com and some other comics that I do when I feel like it, which I don't really. We're joined by Alex.
I'm Alex Heberling of alexesguy.net.
And Mike.
Hi, this is Mike of onyxpro.com.
And this is part two. We're going to call this one actually episode 17. Episode 16 was an EP where I just basically went on a really long-winded story about strippers. So it's kind of a
cast. Yeah, part two.
Yeah,
the revengeing.
So, yes, this is
Tropecast. This time it's personal.
To Electric Boogaloo.
Etc.
You know, I had a friend who was joking about them making a Blade Runner sequel. And what they would call it. It was actually Lauren. And I suggested Blade Runner to Electric Sheep Boogaloo.
Yes.
Which I'm personally very proud of. I think anytime that you can drag something that's a little indie joke in there and also just horrible at the same time, you know, that's really the premise of my comic half the time. So, you know, when I can verbally do it to people,
it makes you groan, and it proves some of your nerd cred.
Yes. Yes, it does. Anyway, we're doing medical tropes today, and apparently this is because friend of the show, guy that does the comic with the magical ducks, I'm completely blanking, Carlos, he's a doctor.
I know exactly who you're talking about, but I can't think of the name of it.
Yeah, he's in another country. He does a thing with magic ducks and, like, a guardian, and the guy's a doctor. And anyway, he drew, like, Becky as a doctor a while back for a show that Fest never got around to doing.
Oh,
so
no,
we have our art already set for this episode, and Fest was like, you should do medical tropes. So I can use this artwork. So we're doing medical tropes. Because
there it is.
We are...
It's Callus Comics.
Callus
Comics.
Okay, yeah.
And they did do the show with Dr. Web Comics.
Right,
like,
but...
months ago.
Okay, they did?
Yeah.
Why did Fest want me to do this? Maybe he
probably wanted us to do it, like, at the time of the show. But I think that was when you and I were, like, completely missing each other on our schedules, and we didn't do a Tropecast for, like, 2 months.
Well, we're making up for it by doing extra ones tonight.
Yes.
We're going to film 17 different Tropecasts.
All Fest is going to wake up tomorrow, and he's going to be like, how are they on Tropecast 25 already?
We're going to be doing a 24-hour comics day with both Tropecasts.
Yeah. Like
24-hour Tropecast.
Yes.
That would be a long haul.
Let's see. Tropecast 19 is just Adam hitting the dun-dun-dun button from Soap over and over again for 3 minutes solid.
We're just going to put the microphone next to a speaker and like play episodes of My Little Pony over the air.
And then we'll just record an entire episode of me typing.
Yes. And then I'll play Warcraft.
Right. Just as long as it's not Skyrim. That's no. Apparently Skyrim plus TV tropes equals some sort of like your soul would be sucked clean out of your body and you would just be this white desiccated husk.
Black
sitting
hole
there.
Of nothingness.
Yeah. So, medical tropes. Specifically, I get the feeling after reading through some of these that a lot of things that they do with medical tropes, especially with TV, it's really, really inaccurate because there is an entire, it's called, I like the cognitive dissonance here because the official name on the Tropecast page is Artistic License - Medicine. However, the address for it, if you're looking for it, is your medical boards forever. Which is just beautiful. And this has got a bunch of the subtropes here, and some of these are just I'm looking at these and I'm like, I know this is just you guys got a place that you want to start attacking this because this is a tangled mess of a topic to.
Well, I think the big thing is that most folks who write fiction and our media and television and whatnot are not doctors. And sometimes, you know, when you're only using Wikipedia as a reference for some things.
Yeah, a few of those shows and things have consultants and things on for occasion, but still the writers are going to do whatever they feel like doing.
Yeah, the writers are going to do what, you know, they think will give the most, you know, dramatic or narrative bang for their buck.
When you run into doctors a lot of times with television shows or movies or anything, they run into a deus ex machina kind of an effect that doctors can do anything if they just decide this is the what has to happen because they're doctors. They have like powers we don't understand.
Well, I think the best place to start this would probably be then the televisually transmitted disease, which is specifically going about the fact that the more interesting a disease is, the more likely someone on TV is to come down with it, even if there's only like 7 people in the world who've been diagnosed with it before. Mm-hmm. Just because it makes good television. And I think that's, you know, I mean, nobody wants to write about the common cold. That's, no. I mean, House doesn't get called in to diagnose a splinter in the finger. Unless that splinter happens to have been tainted with radioactive paint from the 1920s and it causes the person's latent twin that was accidentally absorbed into their body when they were in utero to suddenly start like glowing, causing them to get this weird mottled appearance and look like a rave party when you turn the lights out, you know?
Unless, of course, he gets, you know, pushed into doing clinical duty that day, and then, well, he just berates people until they run away.
Right. But at least House has an explanation for it, which is if actual doctors are doing their actual jobs and diagnosing the normal stuff, House would not normally see most of the patients that he sees with normal diseases because, you know, you have the flu, your local doctor takes care of it. You have a disease which causes you to shoot blood out of your eyes like you're some sort of horrible goth lawn ornament. House winds up with you.
House is your man.
And rightly so.
It's like the A-team of the medical world. If you can find them, you can hire the A-team.
Dun, dun, dun. And of course, there's also the Law and Order variant on here, which is anytime anybody in the news has a disease and they can rip it from the headlines, you know. Yeah,
they'll make an episode about it, right?
Famous actor is diagnosed with Parkinson's equals famous fake actor being diagnosed with something suspiciously similar to Parkinson's. It makes sense. It's just
really lazy writing inspiration.
Yeah, if you look at this, there was another one that it referenced. It's not actually on here. It's, where is it? AB negative. Mm-hmm. And basically that is that if someone on TV needs a blood transfusion, they're going to need the rarest type of blood possible. Period. End of. Because it's not dramatic unless you need...
If you could walk, you know, two places over and find, oh, that guy can give us blood. Yeah, that's not very exciting.
Yeah.
Squeezing every last bit of drama you can out of it.
And honestly, I didn't know that as I was reading this here, O negative, which is what I am, has the worst reaction. You know, like, it's not, plasma goes high to low, red blood cells goes low to high. So me being O negative, which means I got nothing. I got no Rh factors. I got none of the A or B in me.
It means you're a universal donor, but you not can't a get universal anything from receiver. Anybody else. Yes.
Which I did not know. And, you know, heavens to bid, TV never told you that. But, that's really kind of interesting. Blood does not even sort of work the way they think it does on TV. And of course, let's not even talk about the Japanese belief that you can tell a person's blood type by their personality. Mm-hmm. Or their personality by their blood type. Though, let's see. I'm a type O, so my best traits are I'm agreeable, sociable, and an optimist. My worst traits are I'm vain, careless, ruthless, and cruel.
That's big jerk.
Kind
Adam.
Of an oxymoron there, isn't it?
You can be an optimistic, ruthless jerk. You're a psychopath, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to torture him and it's going to be awesome.
Apparently I'm the same because I'm also type O, but I'm O positive.
Ah.
Universal donor.
Well, you know,
they love my blood at the Red Cross.
I suppose now that I think about it, the whole point of Cinematic for the People is I'm going to torture them and it's going to be awesome. So really, maybe there is something to it. Do you know what you are, Mike?
Actually, I can't remember off the top of my head at the moment. I think it's like A negative or something like that. Can't remember.
Well, if you're A, then you're earnest, creative, sensible, and calm.
Sounds about right.
On the good side.
You're also fastidious and over-earnest.
That also seems about right.
So what do you think Fess is? Just looking at these options here.
He's just negative.
He's type B.
I don't know. I'm
wild,
thinking...
a doer, cheerful. That just jumped out at me.
Selfish, irresponsible, and arrogant.
I'm okay, going by the best traits here, Fess. I love you.
I can go with B. I suppose we can go with B. Now, I'm curious what he actually is now. See, there, we're going to have to find out what his blood type is so we can tell whether the Japanese are right or not.
It's an experiment. Oh, boy. The results to come soon enough.
Oh, you know, all future these Tropecast adjectives are vague enough that they can pretty much be you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like reading your Chinese horoscope.
Exactly. Doesn't
really. You are a warm-blooded mammal.
Really?
Unless you are
a warm-blooded mammal. How did you know that?
It's magic. Ooh. It's all written in the stars. And I will explain it to you for $19.99.
Venus is in its 10th house.
No, that's in February.
Venus is in the 1%.
Yeah, but...
It's got 10 houses. I mean, geez.
I suppose it's true.
I was going to say, but yes, Serena isn't, because she doesn't do nearly as well. But obviously, we're talking about different...
But she's not a superstar.
No, she isn't.
I just picked up the Sailor Moon re-releases yesterday, so I've already got Sailor Moon on the brain, and you guys aren't helping.
I was actually talking about the tennis players. Though, now that you mention it, it never occurred to me that Venus and Serena are both Sailor Moon things, too, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the Williams' parents know that. I wonder if that was intentional.
I would doubt it.
It does seem like a very interesting coincidence for names, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, not a coincidence. My daughter is named Samantha. That's Sam. And if we have a boy, the next baby that we have, we're naming him Max. So that I can have Sam and Max.
Mm-hmm.
And only a few people are going to get that it's actually a video game reference, because I'm not being obvious like, oh, I'm naming my kids Mario and Luigi, or Zelda and Link, or I don't know.
Toe Jam and Earl, you know, something like that.
Well, yeah, if you name your kids Toe Jam and Earl, you're paying for therapy. Just for one. Earl's not that bad of a name, but you're paying for Toe Jam's therapy pretty much forever.
It's a traditional name of my people. Don't judge me.
He could go by TJ, perhaps.
And which people are these again?
I don't remember. We forget about them.
Well, the Williams sisters were born in 80 and 81, so that's quite a bit before Sailor Moon was actually out.
Ah, well, maybe they got the name
probably for... Probably coincidence.
I don't know. There's got to be something here. There was a lot of time travel going on in that show. And I'm pretty sure I remember several of the characters playing tennis now.
Yeah, I guess they did in that one episode.
They had an episode or two, yeah. Probably in gym. Anywho.
All right.
They sure did get hurt a lot. They probably could use a doctor.
Nice segue.
Thank you.
Take it away, Mike.
Yep, you're up. You segued into it. Take the ball and run.
Well, we already went through the transmitted diseases because everything always translates into something new and exciting to show up. The other side we really get into is just whenever you're getting into how people react to things going wrong, getting to Heimlich maneuvers and getting into CPR and things like that, it's like it's always like it always works perfectly and it always does exactly what it's supposed to do unless that character is supposed to die and then somehow it doesn't work. It's like these techniques that were created that can just go through and solve any kind of issue, whatever happens, you immediately jump on them and start breathing into them, pushing on their chest, and somehow it's miraculously the thing that saves them, even though that's not a procedure that actually saves you. It just keeps you alive until real help can arrive, you know? It's magical.
Let's see here. Yeah.
That's your clean, pretty, and reliable trope.
Yep.
That was there. It always works. It's always wonderful. And nothing messy or gooey or there's no throw up, there's no vomit, nothing bad ever happens. Nah. It's wonderful.
And of course, anyone that has any experience with this in the real world knows No. They're actually even saying now that you shouldn't do the mouth breathing thing when you're doing CPR. You should really only be doing this if you know what you're doing. And B, they're shying away from that unless you've got like another person there, just because you need to keep the heart going. That's the real, actual useful thing there. And speaking of the heart going,
Well, that's CPR. That's the heart going. You're going to the breathing and everything is done to your tropes of the kiss of life. Suddenly, magically, they come to life as soon as you try to kiss them.
Well, no, because
CPR is just the trying to restart somebody's heart, apparently. What the heck is... Stop it. Shush.
Well, the trope for magically restarting someone's heart is actually called the magical defibrillator.
Yeah, it's rarely ever actually as like nice as they show it to be. But that's really we got instant sedation for if you jab somebody with a needle and then
they immediately fall asleep and everything is wonderful.
Yep. No.
Everything is instant, everything is perfect.
Yeah,
defibrillators always work. CPR always saves lives. Tracheotomy is the most fantastic thing that anybody can do ever, apparently.
And counting on the other end of things, there is the tap on the head, which TV does indeed frequently treat as sort of like a magical one-hit knockout thing. But in fact, usually just serves to either kill the person or piss them off, depending on how hard you've hit them.
The human skull is an extremely hard bone. If you actually hit somebody in the head hard enough to knock them out, you've cracked a skull and done brain damage. It's kind of resilient. It kind of stops things from happening.
And of course, there's the other variant of it, which is the punch to the face, which I know.
It's the knockout punch.
The knockout punch, which I've seen liberal use of in several shows. I think Heroes was probably one of the worst, because practically everybody there had like a glass jaw, and anybody that got whacked in the face was just down for like... It was like a 15-minute respawn, and then they'd get up, and they were fine. And the truth is, concussive blows strong enough to knock you out do more than just knock you out.
Yeah.
It's not like you have an off switch or something like that. Yeesh.
Unless you're Data.
See, I've never... Yeah, unless you're Data, of course, but, nobody knows about that, so...
I might have an off switch.
The only one, the only one that knows about that off switch? The Doctor.
And Riker.
And Riker and Wesley, but Wesley knows everything.
And everybody that was in that trial with Data when they were trying to determine if he was, like, an actual sentient being or property.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we don't talk about them, though. The Rex shows, we never saw them again. It's fine. It's still a secret, trust me. Nobody actually knows about it.
I might have an off switch. I invite people who see me at conventions to try and find out.
I'm gonna poke you repeatedly.
I invite ladies who see me at conventions to try and find out.
That should be a new game. We should have a prize for it. It'd be fantastic.
Is it a switch or a lever? Yo-ho-ho.
See, that would be giving away too much. Think it might be more like a lawnmower starting cord thingy, but with not the same sort of handle.
Oh, I'm having such horrible visuals, Adam.
Gonna replace a spark plug soon. See, my problem has always been with how everything with the punches and the drugs and everything else that works is there's never any consequences of it. It's like if you go back into something like House, it's like, we're gonna take this person who suddenly has like every disease known to man, and they're bleeding out of their butts, which is, I think, is hilarious. The best thing on House ever is you know that they're really in trouble when they start bleeding out of an orifice that they aren't supposed to bleed out of. That always happens in almost every episode.
Or the counter, the thing where the person seems to be completely fine. Maybe they feel a little bit faint or something. And then, like, they lift up the sheet and they're sitting in a pool of their own blood that they didn't even notice.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
there's always blood. There's always blood that came out of somewhere.
Surprise blood.
Yes.
I don't...
But then you always get to that point of, okay, finally, we've solved the mystery, we've cured them, and then 90% of the time, they walk away and they're perfectly fine. There's no ongoing damage. There's no suffering that happens afterwards. There's no damage to other vital organs or anything. It's like within 12 hours, they can just go home. They're perfectly, you know, wonderful and happy again.
Yeah, that's...
I've never gotten that.
That is something that's always bugged me, too. And I think this can roll back to number... was it 15 a little bit as well when we were talking about the soap operas? You know, you can't just have your face ripped off in a car accident and a new one sewn on, and then you get to be another actor and leave the hospital like 2 days later. That's months and months of physical therapy and like
reconstructive surgery,
having staples removed, them using leeches.
There's
on you
muscles and tendons and things involved. No, they don't just come together.
You can't take your face apart like, you know, a Lego set.
even if you're Travolta.
Yes. No.
Because somehow when you switch faces, it also completely changes your body structure at the same time.
And your acting ability. Though, to be fair, since this is a Travolta to Cage switch, it was pretty much a 1-to-1 ratio anyway.
I could see Travolta trying to play, you know, Ghost Rider.
Well, see, I thought you were going to say something completely different there. I think you were was saying Hellboy or something. I thought you... I don't know why, but I thought you were going to say Helen Keller. And I was like...
Helen Keller. In the greatest acting role he's ever had.
That would be a very
John Travolta is Helen Keller.
Like,
be a very experimental film.
I thought Helen Keller was like a 6-year-old girl. And he's like, he doesn't know that. He's deaf and blind.
Little girl, which is the perfect role for John Travolta to try. I think he could pull it off.
Oh, man, we need somebody that can go to do a Travolta impression going, you know, water. Yeah, no, it's
the only Travolta like thing I could think of is him doing it as Danny from Grease. Oh. You need some water, Sandy. Water.
As he's stumbling over tools as he gets to his car.
Yeah.
And that's how
they
really went
singing.
Flying off into the sky at the end, because he actually drove into a tree, but he couldn't tell because he was deaf and blind.
But man, could he build that car? It's a miracle, really.
Yes.
Cool.
So, medical tropes. Okay, how about, let's go lethal diagnosis, which is the statistical probability that after whatever it is has been identified, you are immediately going to get incredibly worse.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to happen. It's like you're perfectly fine and wonderful, walking around, whistling. You might have a small cough or something, but as soon as they find out what it is, suddenly every symptom on the
side. You've got 2 months left to live.
Yeah. It's not even they tell you have 2 months left to live. It's like as soon as you know what it is, suddenly you're dying of it immediately. You could have had it for years up to this point, but the slow progression of it. It's like Yoda. Yoda was 900 years old. How in the space of 6 months did suddenly he go from flipping and spinning around a room with a lightsaber to I'm creaking old and I'm going to die?
Pretty sure that was more than 6 months.
I'm talking about from the time he met Luke, but I mean from the time of him growing up, it was like 10 years. Within the space of 10 years, he went from ninja to
Luke was not 10 years old.
Okay, 20 years, but still, the percentage in there, 900
was born
years old,
at the end of episode
another
three.
20 years is nothing to that.
Well, maybe he just needed to regenerate.
Yes, maybe I really think it was because he moved to Dagobah. It was the climate and everything got into his lungs. He got himself some walking pneumonia or something going on. That was it. That's why he was eating the bad food. That's why he had to have the little sticks.
Unless Dagobah is like the Star Wars galaxy's Florida, and he knew that it was time, so he moved there, and then he left the left blinker on his spaceship permanently on, and then
as he went to Dagobah,
yeah.
To get
there
in,
there's no one to jump him.
Yeah, to get the early bird special and get in a few rounds of golf.
Yeah, what they don't show you is that the rest of Dagobah is one giant shopping mall that he can walk around in wearing sweatpants, and one of those buffets. What was the buffet?
And there's a Denny's. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, they have a Denny's and an old country buffet, and always going in for the early bird special.
Pretty much, yeah.
Trying to get Obi-Wan to call him every once in a while.
We have a counter-argument on the website that Dagobah was actually closer to whatever Yoda's species' natural habitat is. And that also makes sense. Maybe he went home to lay his eggs and die.
Yes, that's it. He was swimming upstream.
See, that's the reason why they won't actually do the next trilogy is because it starts with a frightening scene where Luke hunches over, screams, and then his chest bursts open and, like,
and a little Yoda pops
and
out.
A bunch of Yoda's
come crawling out of his
good.
It's like
times.
Never let Yoda mix drinks for you.
You still don't know what was in that food that he gave him.
I've always been bothered by the whole stormtrooper thing in the last movie.
Which whole stormtrooper thing?
Okay, so the Ewoks...
Them all being clones?
The Ewoks capture all of the good guys, right? At the very beginning. And they've got them tied up on poles, and they're going to take them and cook them.
Yes.
And then they figure out, maybe we shouldn't cook these people. At least a couple of them don't suck. Right?
Yes.
Fast forward to the end of the movie. You've had a stormtrooper massacre on the moon of Endor, right?
Yes.
No dead stormtrooper bodies anywhere. But
no.
Everyone is eating meat.
Yes.
And one of the Ewoks is playing drums made out of empty stormtrooper helmets.
Yes.
What the fuck?
Nom nom nom. Stormtrooper cafe.
I never thought about that before.
Well, you gotta do something with all those bodies.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's completely and totally economical. I'm just, you don't really think about that so much, you know?
Hey, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, we didn't judge people for things like that,
and
okay?
It's not even cannibalism, because it's not like they're human or anything.
No, they're basically genetically engineered cows. They're, you know, they're clones. They were built in a lab.
Very gamey flavor.
They're not really people.
Yeah, it's not like they were eating anything sentient. I mean, have you seen the way they shoot?
I don't trust anything that can't shoot.
There's no intelligence there. I believe we may have broken our one person in the chat room.
Hooray! He needs a doctor.
Will you stop trying to drag us back to the medical tropes? We're having a good time over here. Join us. Join us in the distraction.
I'm just kind of stepping back and watching it all unfold.
Okay, what haven't we covered so far? Let me hear.
I think I had another one that didn't get covered yet.
Okay. How about suck out the poison?
Oh.
It's another one of those procedures that somehow works and doesn't make any sense at all.
I also invite any ladies that run into me at conventions to
suck out the poison. Because I've got a disease, and you're the cure.
Don't forget your pepper spray, girls. Keep it in your purse. Never know when it'll come in handy.
Oh,
yeah,
the other
should
one
you
I
happen
to
be wandering past a peaceful protest outside of an Occupy convention thing. topical humor. Anyway.
The other one that I wanted to check off was One of Our Own.
Oh, yeah.
One of Our Own.
Which is basically when, you know, Dr. Cuddy or somebody comes down with some mysterious illness, and so there's all sorts of fun, wacky sexual tension hijinks when she goes into the hospital and House is trying to diagnose her and whatnot.
Well, it's always fun when one of the actual doctors become the patient, and all of a sudden they're on the other side of that table.
Yes. It's all like a reversal of roles and stuff.
Yes. They get to feel lost and vulnerable because now they're the ones that don't know what's going to happen.
Let's take a... Shall we take a break at this moment while we gather ourselves and redirect before launching into another tirade of non-medically related tropes?
Sure.
All right, so... Once again, I call upon the magical power of Fest to find an appropriate song for this train wreck, and we shall be right back.
Save me, oh, 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 she's all I've ever known, oh, 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 I just can't let it go, oh, 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 oh. Doctor, doctor, I'm in out of my head, just give me something to make me in bed. Doctor, doctor, I'm a tearing at the seams, she's in my train, I'm beating her head, but this. Oh,
That was Doctor Doctor by Building Rome, found at musicalley.com by Mevio.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Tropecast. Email us at tropecast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Where'd my song go? I can't find him anymore.
Doctor,
I don't really
doctor,
know any songs about doctors. And Dr. Worm isn't really even a real doctor.
Aw, where's my Stephen Lynch collection? Oh, too many songs, too many songs.
There's always Alanis Morissette. I'm not the doctor.
She certainly isn't. Isn't that ironic, don't you think?
No, not really.
Exactly.
I understand.
Neither was that
what
song, which was really ironic.
I'm miming slapping you through the internet, Mike.
Yes.
Hear that? That is my hand waving in front of the microphone, slapping. Ooh.
Actually, our chat room has thrown out a something that reminds me of one of the tangential tropes that I was going to go into, because they brought up the Doctor, as in Doctor Who. Let's see
right,
here.
You know what? We don't want to get sued by the BBC, so that's all we'll do.
I cast. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
Classic.
Which is started with a guy from General Hospital where he was advertising for a cough medicine, and he'd start it with, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. And I choose this, and you should choose it too, because I'm an actor. You're like, that'd be like going to, like, Tim Allen advocating for, you know, like, I'm not actually good at repairing things, but I play, okay, my character's not actually good at repairing things.
I play
things
a handyman on TV.
But if you want to staple yourself in the face, I recommend this brand of staple gun. You know, and here is the awesome thing.
Back is that in almost the, like Mike Rowe doing all those commercials for the Home Depot and things?
Mike Rowe does actually get out and do all sorts of things. So
yes. Well, it's a little more legitimate, yeah.
Yeah, his show isn't about him pretending to go out and do jobs. His show is about him actually being exposed to horrible things, albeit briefly.
Yes. So it'd be more like Survivor Man trying to advocate the Boy Scouts or something.
Yeah.
The guy who's followed around by a camera crew and goes to a hotel every night once they shut him off.
I'm Bear Grylls for Gatorade. I've drank my own urine, and this isn't nearly as bad as that. Almost nearly as bad as that.
Well, not quite.
Yeah.
This has electrolytes.
Nom, nom, nom.
No, but the awesome thing is, back in, like, the late 90s, we did a, like, 9-episode thing on public access here, which had, it was kind of like a Power Rangers spoof, and I played the resident mad scientist, Dr. Vielgut. Which means I can actually legitimately say I am not a doctor, but I played one on TV.
Nice.
Which is awesome.
Fantastic.
And then, of course, they offer, as a contrast to that, trust me, I'm a doctor. Which is usually the exact opposite of, you know, it's where I'm going to say something that ought to be reassuring, but it's going to have an undesired effect of, you know, And it'd be like Mario standing there beating an octopus to death with a wrench going, "Trust me, I'm a plumber. I'm also a doctor. And a tennis referee.
And a car racer. And a... yeah. And
I live a very interesting life."
He's done more jobs than Barbie at this point.
Yeah, but unlike Barbie, he never changes outfits.
He gets a different hat.
Maybe he just has a closet full of red coveralls. You don't know.
Yeah. He's very practical. Or maybe he's just dirty and doesn't wash them. I mean, he's always swimming all the time. Maybe he counts as washing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a thought. I just, yeah, I'd hope after rummaging around in the sewers and all of those pipes and stuff, Dr. Mario at least bothers to wash his hands.
But he's still wearing the same gloves.
Oh, yeah, that's sort of...
Well, maybe he puts latex gloves over his white gloves.
Like, you need an appendectomy. That's a plunger. Sorry, yeah. Wrong bag.
It's-a-me.
It's-a-me, malpractice-o.
No, I just want to go listen to Brental Floss's Dr. Mario song. Hey, maybe we first can get that to play. He would probably let us use it.
We might. We could certainly try. Okay.
He is, after all, a card for Wagon webcomic battle.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Sure there is.
I just got spam from something on my Android. I am upset now. It actually, like, popped up as a notification, even.
Hey, maybe your phone needs a doctor.
I think it may.
Maybe it's got a virus.
Or a pirate.
Or a pirate. A pirate virus.
No, I need a pirate to cure the virus.
Yarg!
I have to figure out which application that was and delete it with extreme prejudice. Okay, and then, of course, from there, we can spin it into the good old Dr. McCoy standby. I am a doctor, not a placeholder.
In which placeholder is something like, you know,
mechanic. Whatever's available at the time.
Or yeah. Veterinarian, yeah. Or seamstress, or whatever.
Yeah. Though, actually, where is... There was,
At least it's a doctor that knows his place. It's the opposite of the other trouble, was it? Surgeons can do autopsies if they want. Which is when we get into that idea of, for some reason on all those drama shows, it seems that a surgeon will go and something will screw up, and then they will go through and do autopsies, and they'll look at records, and they'll do research, and they'll do other things that aren't in their specialty at all. So why are they doing them?
Certainly not their jobs either.
Yeah, there's no teams that are out there doing other work. It's these five people are doing all the work and nobody else in the entire building matters at all.
Well, plus, then we wouldn't have Crossing Jordan and was it Quincy? Was the original medical examiner and Ducky from NCIS and...
Yeah, but they're actually doing what they're supposed to be doing. We're talking about guys that have no business doing research and trying to figure things out at all.
I know, I'm just saying, then they would be putting the other people out of the job.
Medical establishments have departments and stuff, and you transfer patients between them and whatnot. And you don't just, you know, have one person's case assigned to a single doctor. It goes by departments.
1,000 people on this ship and the 5 guys on the bridge do all the work.
Yeah, exactly. My mom's a nurse, so I do know some things about how hospitals work.
Mm-hmm.
There was an
I was in a hospital once. It was when I was born.
You were also in a hospital a couple of years ago when your leg nearly fell off.
Yes. I may be in the hospital again in a couple months here.
Why, what did you do now?
Oh, nothing. I have a kidney stone.
Ah.
It's a big one. It's impressive, actually.
That sounds unpleasant.
Nah, it's fine. I don't feel anything. They even diagnosed and everything, and I haven't died yet, so I'm cool.
Yay!
Hooray!
I guess kidney stones aren't like gallstones. I've heard gallstones are incredibly painful.
No. Yeah, it just depends. I just, you know, happen to not have anything going on with this, but I won't go into the details on the procedure. It's fairly graphic and weird, and I don't like thinking about it. So I'm going to be happy and not.
Yay.
Yay. Anywho.
Well, the surgeons can do autopsies if they want. Reminded me of another trope, but unfortunately I didn't write it down.
Oh.
And it had something to do with dentists, but it was basically like,
well,
you can make
that reminded me of something too, but yeah, go ahead.
It's like in times of an emergency, you can, a dentist will, here we go. Open heart dentistry, which is basically, you know, at some level, any degree of medical knowledge makes you more qualified to try and do something than people who have less medical knowledge than you. And I know that this is kind of a this is a TV joke sort of thing, but interestingly enough, my father was a veterinarian, and when we were going through his stuff after he died, we found a manual from the 60s that had been sent to him by the U.S. government. And it was apparently sent to a lot of people. And it was basically, essentially, cutting through a lot of the, like, niceties. It said, when the Cold War happens, and we know the Cold War is about to happen, like, we know Cuba's got nukes and we're all kind of dead. When the nukes start dropping, you are to cease being a veterinarian and report to the nearest hospital, where we're going to tap you to be, if not a doctor, then at least a high-functioning nurse that can do sutures and stuff like that, because you do have basic medical knowledge. So when World War III starts, you gather up all of your staff and all of your medical supplies and drive to the nearest hospital, because you're being conscripted.
Huh.
And I always sort of thought that that was, I wish I knew where that was, because it really made me realize how close to, like, the brink of actual war we were when they were making plans for things like that. And they were like, yeah, in the event of the apocalypse that we're actively trying to cause, here's our plans for you. Here's where you're going.
Where's that dentist we brought in here? I don't know. Is he just running around filling all the holes with giant chunks of rock? I don't know what he's doing.
Well, dentists have some medical training. Like, they know anesthetics. You know, that. Just thinking about the plausible, practical things. Dentists know local anesthetics. They understand nerves. A lot of them can do gas anesthetics, so in a pinch, you could force a dentist to be an anesthesiologist at the very least.
Yeah, and they do, like, sutures and stuff, too.
They do sutures. My father...
I had a root canal to remove an accessory root on one of my teeth on my 18th birthday, actually.
Oh, fun.
And they had to sew up my gum.
Oh, nice.
When it was over.
To be fair, like, my father was mostly cats and dogs. But he did other types of animals. And some veterinarians will do, you know, horses and goats and sheep and cows and stuff. In addition to cats and dogs, you're talking about multi-species disciplines here already. When you think about it, humanity's just another species. So, and there's a lot of different things between cats and dogs. I mean, you look at a house cat and you look at a horse, you can't use the same medicine on the two of them. You got to think. You got to know that stuff. So a veterinarian, not a bad proxy for a doctor, as long as it's something, you know, like a gaping chest wound or something like that, that you need, like, packed and cleaned and debrided and sewn up. I'd rather have one of those than like a postman standing there with a tape gun. You're trying to kill me.
Liquid, yes. Fragile, and perishable.
Yes, but I'm sending you on the express to heaven. I mean, all things considered, I'd rather have a veterinarian working on me than Dr. Mario.
Everybody's coming in wounded. They leave patched up and neutered. It's fantastic.
You know, there are some people that I'd... Anyway, Tropecast... it's been a good night. So anybody got any other topics that you want to particular hit? You want to just sort of wander around the sphere here, or are we done? I think we did. We pretty much chewed through the entire list, didn't we?
I got through most of those things, yeah, that we had right there.
So
I always kind of liked when you get into video games and things like that. The one thing that always drove me a little crazy with those kind of things is the entire point of, like, they always have the more realistic games they keep coming up with, but yet you can still just, you know, pick up this bottle of medicine and suddenly all those bullet wounds and teeth marks that you got before just go away.
Well, you know what that is. It's meth.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, you know, you don't care that you've been shot. You keep going.
I just like watch people playing, you know, a few games here and there. I go through YouTube a lot and watch playthroughs on all sorts of different games. And, like, people just went through some huge, grueling battle. They're about to buy. They got shot 17 times and they were attacked by a zombie and they're bleeding out of everywhere and hell should probably do something about that. But then all of a sudden they walk over to the thing and they pick up a first aid kit and this little pop sound goes off and, oh, I'm totally fine now. It's like, I would like to see a game set up at some point that actually gave you more permanent kind of injuries. So it's like, yeah, you really have to be careful. Otherwise, you may have a limp for the rest of this game. I think it'd be interesting, especially getting into, you know, Skyrims and some of the more open-ended, bigger worlds that they try to add more detail and things. It's like, why not have actual scarring, have actual effects that happen? Never happens. It's very sad to me. Just waiting for it.
Well, you know, I think that that's also part of a cross-genre disciplinary bleed, because if you think about it, what were the first video games that had health points? Role-playing games.
Yes.
Role-playing games are traditionally pretty much fantasy, and while simply opening up a first aid kit, curing you doesn't make any sense, downing a magical red bottle, you know, that's health potion. It heals you. That's what it does. That's why it's called health potion.
Yeah, I had one of those once. It was pretty awesome.
And plus actually programming things like specific wounds on your person and changing your dressings and everything would just add a whole bunch of bulk to that game. That,
well, not really. I mean, we're talking about, you know, skin covers on different points of the body. I mean, that's kind of stuff's pretty basic at this point.
Well, they've had some stuff with like that. Detail. Like, I did a lot of Mech Warrior and Battletech, and for those, you'd get damage to the robot as you were going on. You know, you could, like, if you took enough damage to your left arm, you couldn't use your left arm anymore. Nice. If you took enough damage to the legs, you took a serious slowdown. And of course, that would go on up until you actually got destroyed. None of the games I ever played, if I don't remember correctly, had, like, you know, instant repair anythings.
No, in other words, you had to go back to your base and rebuild and...
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd like to see something like that.
I'd like to.
I mean, with the games like your Dead Rising and things like that have the time-based kind of setup, so you only have to worry about so much set time to work within. There's no reason you couldn't have something like that kind of built in. It'd be kind of interesting.
I'd like to be able to take my giant robot through a spray paint shop, have it painted a different color, and then everybody forget that they're mad at me. Like, no, I'm sorry, that was the blue giant robot that was destroying it. As you can clearly see, mine is red.
Well, no, then you're getting into GTA kind of stuff, because when you went through San Andreas and such, if you were being chased by the cops and things like that and everybody was pissed off at you, you could pull into a body shop, redo your car, and you drive away. They don't know who you are anymore.
Yes, that would be what I was making fun of.
Yeah, that's what I want. Yes. Except with the giant robot.
Explain the joke.
But then they only painted your mech from the front, so as you'd be sneaking away in the mech, they'd see the red backside.
It's like, hey. You'd
be like, wait a minute.
Why, you, and shaking their fist at you.
Exactly.
Damn you, Duke boys! Yeehaw! And then, now I want to see a giant robot jumping over a ramp in slow motion.
I want to see a giant robot jumping over a fat man in a white suit.
That would work, too.
Yes.
Can it be a ramp over a fat man in a white suit?
Well, I think you'd probably have to if you wanted to get clearance.
Yeah, I guess so.
Then he would definitely need a doctor.
A doctor!
As long as whatever it was that he had wasn't lupus.
No.
It's never lupus.
Except that one time that it was, and everybody forgets that one.
Womp, womp, womp.
It's almost never lupus.
But they keep trying.
One out of several hundred at this point, but...
Yes, every episode of House. Chase always says, is it lupus? It's not lupus.
You know what would be really funny? If somebody'd gotten a disease because they'd been bit by a rabbit. Because then it wouldn't be lupus, it would be lepus.
Yes, it'd be, lepus. Yes. Horrible, horrible movies coming back to mind.
Yes.
Did you ever get to watch Night of the Lepus?
I did.
Good golly.
It was terrible.
It is. Just giant superimposed rabbits bouncing, not even doing anything, just hopping around.
And you know what it's freaking out. You know what it reminded me of?
Giant rabbits Ritters. Running around in like a little town set thing.
It reminded me of Critters.
I watching that when I was really little.
With rabbits.
Yeah.
Because you got all the little ones, and then you got a couple of the like giant ones that are just rolling through. And
they're trying to build like, blockades of fire to like stop them from getting to the actual town. And
I wonder if Carrot Top is afraid of the movie Night of the Lepus.
I would think so. He should be afraid of something.
Yes.
Kendra
yes.
Carey says it was directed by DeForest Kelly.
Was it? Awesome.
Oh, I guess he was in it.
Yes. He probably played a doctor.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a... Holy shit, that's a giant rabbit.
I'll take care of that right away.
I don't want to be in this movie anymore. Beam me up!
All right. We should probably wrap this up.
I'm calling this done.
Yeah.
So thank you once again.
When we start drifting off,
joining us for the Tropecast. My name is Adam Smithy of the webcomic webcomichell.com.
And I'm Alex Heberling of alexisguide.net.
This is Mike of onyxsparrow.com.
And I'd like to thank Fess for editing this train wreck together. And Rampage Networks, which is the host of all of the Webcast Beacon various family of podcasts, and our wonderful chat room, who has really done just a fantastic job of participating tonight. And
we love you.
We do.
We all love you so much.
Mwah. More cowbell. Night, everybody. Where is the button to turn this off?
Push the button, Frank.
I'm pushing the button.